How's it going?
She asked. Champ stared at the screen. Vultures are closing. You ready?
We're ready, she said.
I'll be in touch, he said, and broke the connection. On the screen, the fighters, vultures on the one hand, V-wings on the other, lit up space with weapons fire. And here we go, Gobi said. The approaching cloud of vulture droids opened fire as one, their repeating blasters spitting dashes of red energy through the void. Vader swung his interceptor away from the Perilous, burning from dozens of mine explosions, and flew directly toward the oncoming vultures. Lines of energy filled space around him, the solid green pulses from the Perilous and the intermittent red blasts of the droids. Vader let the Force guide him, his hands smooth and rapid on the controls, and the ship danced unscathed in the matrix of blasts. The vulture droids dispersed in all directions as the interceptor and the trailing V-wings approached. Vader fixed on one of them, fired, destroyed it, swung hard right, fired again and destroyed another. Perhaps a third of the droids engaged with the V-wings, while the bulk of them continued on toward the Perilous. Vader's comm was filled with the chatter of the squadron's pilots, calling out to one another, picking targets, holding one another's flanks. Vader picked one of the droids and locked on as it lurched left and right, attempting to shake his pursuit. The vultures were slow, awkward flyers, and something about them struck him as odd. And then he had it. They'd been modified. All of them had bulges on their bellies, an added compartment or weapon of some kind. It made them awkward in flight, far less maneuverable than usual. Curious, he closed on one, targeted it with care, fired, and sheared off one of its wing pods. It spun out of control, and the centrifugal force started to tear it apart. Vader stayed on it as the belly compartment tore loose to reveal its contents. Hundreds of metal spheres spilled out and into space. Vader slammed on a stick, driving the interceptor down, but he could not avoid the shrapnel altogether. The spheres slammed into his ship and clung there, and he saw that they weren't shrapnel, but buzz droids. The magnetic ball sprouted legs and eye stalks and clambered along the wings and fuselage of his fighter, positioning themselves to do the most damage. He dodged fire from a pursuing vulture droid by veering hard left, fired on another, destroying it, then drew on the force and caused a wave of kinetic energy to repel the droids from his vessel. Unable to resist the sudden blast, they flew off in all directions and, to his surprise, exploded with enough force for the series of blast waves to rock his ship and temporarily send him spinning. A vulture got behind him while he was vulnerable, fired, and nicked his wing before he could right his ship and shake the pursuit.
The vultures are carrying a payload of explosive buzz droids,
Vader said over the comm. He glanced back toward the Perilous and saw scores of the vultures, fat with the explosive buzz droids, flying straight at the Star Destroyer.
Try to keep them off the Perilous,
the squadron commander said to the rest of the pilots, understanding the implications right away. Vader slammed on his stick, whirled his ship around, and headed back in the direction of the Perilous, but he could see that he was already too late. Dozens of the droids had been vaporized in the withering fire from the Star Destroyer, and the more maneuverable V-wings locked on and destroyed many too, but many would get through. Meanwhile, clouds of buzz droids that had survived the destruction of the vulture droids, carrying them, floated free in space, legs and eye stalks waving. Vader saw several latch onto a V-wing as it flew through them. They scurried onto the wings and canopy and exploded, shearing a wing, shattering the canopy, and destroying the fighter. Vader accelerated and flew directly toward a cloud of them, using his free hand to focus his use of the Force as he approached. A gesture, an exercise of will, and he slammed several of the free-floating buzz droids into one another, where they exploded, clearing his way. He locked on to another vulture droid before it could reach the Perilous,
followed it as it veered left, then right, fired, and turned it to a cloud of flames.
As he'd expected, the Vulture droids fired as they approached the Star Destroyer, but they did not reduce speed to increase maneuverability. Instead, they stayed at maximum acceleration, obviously intending to crash into the ship and release their cargo. Vader destroyed another, then another.
But he couldn't get them all, and the surviving vultures slammed into the ship at full speed. Enormous towers of flame rose from the Perilous's superstructure. Vader veered hard left and wheeled around, cutting down another vulture droid as he turned. He could imagine that the damage to the interior of the Star Destroyer was worse than he could see, as the vulture droids would have ejected their buzz droids into the corridors.
The tiny bombs would run deeper into the ship and explode. Two vultures headed directly for the shield generator. He destroyed one and then another, but the buzz droids they carried floated out of the fire of the vulture's destruction, glommed onto the shield generator, and there exploded into flame. Another vulture crashed into the flight deck. Another hit adjacent to the bridge. Many crashed into or near the ship's gun turrets and destroyed them. Secondary explosions rocked the ship. The Star Destroyer was leaving fire and debris and bodies from scores of wounds. Vader flew under the ship, looking for more targets, and saw another wave of vultures streaking toward the Perilous. Curses and exclamations of shock carried over the calm from the V-Wing squadrons.
Stay focused!
The squadron commander barked.
And destroy as many as possible before they reach the ship!
Vader wheeled back around, accompanied by the bulk of the V-Wing squadron, and opened fire on the Vulture droids. He destroyed one, another. A V-Wing to starboard caught droid fire and exploded. Callan had stopped muttering, and even he was grinning as they watched the Perilous burn. Gobi could no longer sit, but paced the floor in excitement, eyes on the screens, a smile fixed on his face. But Cham had a better understanding of the ship's ability to withstand damage than did his comrades. They'd wounded it, killed hundreds, maybe thousands of Imperials, but they were nowhere close to destroying it.
Her guns are out of commission! Gobi exclaimed. She's defenseless! Let's finish her!
The second wave, Callan, Cham ordered. And Callan sent the command to the second wave of vulture droids Cham had held in reserve. He resumed muttering to himself the moment he sent the signal. Another 100 or so vulture droids, all of them heavy with explosive buzz droids, powered up and accelerated out of the asteroid belt toward the ship. Cham watched them go, daring to let hope find a home in his chest. He bit down twice to activate the tiny comm implanted in his ear and spoke to Isval.
We may not need you after all, he said. Things are going well.
I hope you're right, she returned,
and he caught the disappointment in her tone.
But we're ready.
Isval sat in the co-pilot's chair of the boxy repair ship on the vast underground landing pad on Ryloth. Beside her in the pilot seat, Eshko fiddled with the comp. The movement had been able to put teams aboard three of the repair shuttles, and now they were just waiting. She wanted to stand and pace, but there was no room. The anti-grav tool pallet and the rest of her team, Eshko, Drim, Crossed, and Phelan, the lone human in their group, filled the cramped quarters of the shuttle. Cham had said everything was going well. If all went according to plan, and things usually did when Cham made the plans, she expected a call to launch to go out shortly. If the Perilous was burning, and she hoped fervently that it was, it would need non-Imperial assistance. Several dozen other repair ships sat on the pad. Maintenance droids and engineers holding data pads moved here and there, checking the status of the ships. The onboard comm was listening in on emergency Ryloth frequencies.
Nothing, Eshko said.
They're not desperate enough yet to call for Twi'lek help,
Isval said, staring out of the ship.
But they will be.
Meanwhile, there was nothing to do but wait. And Isfahl detested waiting. Vader eyed the oncoming wave of vulture droids.
Stay back, Commander. The entire squad. Destroy any ships that get past me.
Sir, but...
Those are my orders, Commander.
Yes, Lord Vader.
Captain Lewitt's voice came over the comm, his tone stressed. Alarms blared in the background.
Lord Vader, I'm not sure we can survive another barrage from the vulture droids.
You won't need to,
Vader said, and cut the connection. Vader fell entirely into the Force, let his anger flow through him, harnessed it for the weapon it was, and flew directly toward the vulture droids. The mirth went out of the command center, replaced by the quiet of an unspoken question. Gobi gave it voice.
Is that a single ship breaking off? Is that a V-wing or something else? What is it doing?
Cham could not distinguish one fighter craft from another, but he had no doubt who sat at the controls of that single ship. He's not a man, Isfahl had said, and Cham half believed it. He activated his comm and spoke to Isfahl. I think we may need you after all.
What's happening? She asked, excitement in her tone.
He shook his head. Uncertain.
Vader, I thought we might get lucky, but... Just be ready.
When Vader got within weapons range of the vultures, the entire swarm broke in all directions and opened fire on him. Enmeshed in the Force, he intuitively calculated angles, velocities, and vectors. His interceptor rising, falling, spinning, wheeling, navigating the firestorm of blaster fire where the margin for error was millimeters. He didn't return fire. His weapon was not blasters. Instead, he fixed on the leading vulture droids and reached out with the Force. With an effort of will and a slight gesture, he tore open the belly compartment of three vultures. The tiny explosive buzz droids they held poured out into space. Many of the trailing vulture droids, unable to dodge, collided with the scattered buzz droids, and explosions turned dozens of vulture droids and buzz droids into debris. Vader took hold of another vulture droid's belly and tore it open, then another. Clouds of buzz droids filled space with countless small explosions, wreaking havoc on the vulture droid swarm. Vader flew through and past them, still dodging blaster fire. He wheeled hard about and pursued them as the surviving vulture droids, perhaps only a score, made their way toward the perilous.
Allow none of the stragglers through, Commander.
Vader called to the squadron commander as he accelerated in pursuit. Vader had the vulture droids trapped between him and the rest of the squadron.
He went high to avoid any crossfire and watched the V-wings trade fire with the droids.
The droids hit and destroyed two V-wings, but the rest of the squad made short work of the remaining droids. Debris, fire, and clouds of buzz droids spun through space.
Well done, Commander. Maintain a perimeter. I'm returning to the Perilous.
The Star Destroyer hung against the dark of space, the huge wedge of its superstructure burning in dozens of places along its length. Jagged holes in the hull yawned like mouths. Vader entered through the smoke-filled landing bay and saw the destruction there. Flames were everywhere. Broken tubes vented gas and fluid. Crew scrambled everywhere, some in portable oxygen masks, others succumbing to smoke. Droids, automated suppression systems, and fire teams fought the fires here and there, but most went untended. The damage was more than the crew could deal with. They'd need assistance. Bodies and body parts lay scattered among the wreckage. Ships burned on the landing pad, including the Emperor's shuttle. Seeing that, Vader suspected his master had foreseen much of what had happened. But if so, he'd done little to stop it. Vader set down his ship, popped his canopy, leapt out, and strode through the carnage and smoke. Wrecked mech droids, the ruins of fighters, and pieces of exploded vulture droids littered the landing bay. smoke curling up from the debris. Emergency alarm screamed. Vader hurried toward the bridge. Throughout the ship, the scene was the same. Crew running about, shouting commands, screams of pain, smoke and fire, chaos, disorder. Vader's anger grew with every step he took. Belcour stood in his quarters, heart racing, nervous sweat putting an uncomfortable sheen on his face. He took a deep breath when his comlink buzzed. This is Colonel Belcour.
Sir, you should get to the comm center right away. The Perilous has been attacked.
Belcour had rehearsed his answer many times. I'm on my way, he said, with just the right amount of alarm and urgency. Status of the Perilous?
Unknown at this time, sir. We don't have details yet. Still awaiting word.
Belcour cut the connection, smoothed his uniform, adjusted his hat, donned his mask, and headed for the communications center. Men and women in uniform hurried through the halls of the installation. The ring of his boots off the uncarpeted floor sounded loud in his ears as he mentally replayed what he would say to Morse. Ahead, he saw the transparent doors of the communications hub. They slid open at his approach, leaking out a gust of frantic comm chatter. He caught snippets here and there. The lieutenant colonel in charge in his absence saw him enter and hurried toward him, nodding at something in his ear comm as he walked. Colonel Belcour, the lieutenant colonel said. Update, Belcour ordered. His legs felt weak. The Perilous was hit the moment she entered the system, sir. Again, Belcour's rehearsed answer came quickly to his lips. Hit? How? By whom? Looks like the terrorists, sir. But we can't be certain. Status. He expected to hear that it had been destroyed, but he didn't. She's heavily damaged, sir. Belcour's mask melted in the heat of his surprise. What do you mean, damaged? I thought... He caught himself just in time and said, That's good news, at least. Go on. She sounds heavily damaged from what we can glean. Reports are still coming in. She's limping badly and on fire. Looks as though she was attacked by a whole swarm of mines and old droid fighters, if the reports are accurate. The attacking ships have been destroyed, but she needs help containing the fires and with repairs. Get me Moff Moores on the comm.
Yes, sir.
Belcour felt the soft vibration of the encrypted comm link he kept in his pocket, Cham reaching out to him. He ignored it the first time, and the second, but on the third he looked around, stepped into a corner of the room, and put the comm link to his ear.
Yes,
he said, sounding as though he was speaking only to another Imperial officer.
I've heard, yes.
It is unbelievable. Cham's voice came over the connection.
Put out a call for all available repair ships, including non-Imperial ships, to get to the Perilous and offer aid.
Belcour swallowed his anger and adopted a fake half-smile.
I don't think that's possible. You didn't do what you were supposed to.
The lieutenant colonel was waving him over. He must have reached Moff Moore's. Belcour signaled him to wait.
Do it now, Belcour. Right now. She's burning and she'll go down. Do it.
Belcour's anger at being ordered around by Cham prevented him from speaking for a moment.
I'll see what I can do,
he finally said between gritted teeth and cut the connection. Belcour hustled to the lieutenant colonel.
I have them off,
the lieutenant colonel said.
I'll take it in the conference room,
Belcour said.
Yes, sir.
Belcour composed himself before stepping into the quiet of the conference room. There, he activated the comm, and a hologram of Moore's formed about the triangular conference table. She looked crisp in her uniform and clear-eyed. Belcour did not like it at all.
Moff Moore's, Belcour began. The Perilous was attacked the moment she...
I already heard!
Moore shouted. She was red-faced with anger.
A lock of dark hair escaped the tight bun she wore it in and formed a hook across her brow.
What I want to know is how an entire fleet of rebel ships held position at the edge of the system and no one knew of it.
Our resources are limited, as you know. We don't normally patrol that far out in the system.
That's not my question, Colonel. I want to know how they got there to begin with.
In truth, Belcour had diverted patrol craft and flight clearances in a way that allowed Sham to move the ships into position. But he had been careful to do so using Morse's authorization code. The diversions themselves were not necessarily suspicious. Changes to patrol routes happened all the time in response to intelligence. But if anyone grew suspicious, the investigation would point to Morse. It would be Belcour's word against Morse's, of course, but in that situation, Belcour would come out the better.
He could show that Morse was a spice addict, that she embezzled the proceeds of Imperial mining operations, that she fraternized with known criminal elements like the Hutts, and that she'd shirked her responsibility when she'd thrown the management of Ryloth into Belcour's lap.
Meanwhile, Belcour, loyal to a fault, had tried his best to do his duty. "I'll figure out what happened and hold those responsible to account," Belcour said. "Meanwhile, may I suggest that we send out an immediate call for all available repair ships to give aid to the Perilous?"
"Yes, yes,"
said Morse, and waved at him to go do it.
"Do that. What?"
"What, ma'am?"
But Morse hadn't been speaking to him. She was speaking to someone on her staff that Belcour could not see. While Morse was occupied, Belcour opened the door and called out to the Lieutenant Colonel. "All available repair ships, including non-Imperial ships, are to be ordered to assist the Perilous. Do it now."
"Yes, sir,"
the Lieutenant Colonel said and started issuing orders. Belcour returned to the table and to Morse, who was still speaking to someone Belcour could not see. Something had changed. Morse looked shrunken, collapsing in on herself, her face crestfallen, her eyes fearful.
"I need that confirmed,"
Morse said to her staffer, a tremor in her voice.
"I need it confirmed right now."
Something in Morse's tone alarmed Belcour.
"Moff?"
he asked, his voice tentative. Morse swallowed, cleared her throat, and sat down.
"Belcour, the Emperor and Lord Vader are reportedly aboard the Perilous."
The words hit Belcour like a kick to the stomach. For a moment, he could not speak or breathe. He put his palms on the table to support legs that seemed to have turned to cloth.
The Emperor?" "This happened on your watch, Belcour,"
Morse said. She sounded small, timid, terrified.
"Our watch," Belcour said.
"Our watch, ma'am."
To that, Morse said nothing. Thoughts ricocheted around Belcour's mind, none of them making much sense. Had Cham known? How could he have known? He must have. Cham had known all along, and he'd strung Belcour along, and now Belcour was in too deep, and he'd be responsible for...
"Colonel!"
Morse said, bringing him back to himself.
"Ma'am?" Belcour said.
"Get escorts and repair ships up there, Belcour. And I'm coming down to Ryloth."
"Of course," Belcour said absently and cut the hologram. "Of course you are." He grabbed the holoprojector projector and slammed it against the table once, twice, until it shattered. He felt eyes on his back. Everyone in the main room of the comm center was probably staring at him. He didn't care. For a long moment, he simply sat there, breathing heavily, any attempt to think lost to the churn of his emotions. Vader. The Emperor. He tried to think of how he could manage events, how he could extricate himself from the hole in which he'd buried himself. He could run. He'd thought about it before. He could do it, just get off planet and find some hovel farther out on the rim and... He knew he couldn't.
If Vader and the Emperor were dead and he was found to have fled, the Imperial Security Bureau would hound him to the universe's end, and the ISB always found those they hunted. And if Vader and the Emperor weren't dead and he was found to have fled, Vader himself would hound him. He had to see it through. He had no other choice. He stood, took a deep breath, straightened his uniform, and turned back toward the main comm room. Eyes that had been on him found their duty stations. The lieutenant colonel, standing just outside the room, stood to attention when Belcour's eyes fell on him. Belcour walked through the door and said to him, "Ensure the repair ships have a fighter escort. Do it right now. I'll be back. I need to check something." "Yes, sir," the lieutenant colonel said, and almost sprinted to a nearby comm officer. Belcour swallowed as he walked through comm central, out into the corridor, and onto a lift, and finally into an officers-only restroom. He stood there, his back against the door. No one else was in the room, so he locked himself in. He consciously unclenched his jaw, his fists, his guts. Vader and the Emperor. Vader and the Emperor! His encrypted comm buzzed. Cham. He snatched it from his pocket, squeezing it so hard it slipped from his hand and fell to the floor. He picked it up, cursing, opened the channel, and held it to his ear. "You bastard," he said. "Do you have any idea what you've done?"
"Calm down, Belcour."
"Calm down? You tried to kill—"
He caught himself and reduced his tone to a whisper.
"You tried to kill the Emperor and Vader."
"I'm going to kill the Emperor and Vader, and you're going to help me."
Belcour could not bring himself to agree. Cham must have read into his silence.
"You will, Belcour. You must. The attack already happened. You're implicated. There will be nowhere for you to run."
Belcour cut the connection, his heart racing, sweating under his uniform, his mind filled anew with a static of stress. He paced back and forth in the restroom, back and forth, as the encrypted comm buzzed in his pocket.
"Blast, blast, blast, blast!"
He answered the comm.
"Say nothing, Colonel,"
Cham snapped, pronouncing Belcour's rank as he would an insult.
"And just listen. I told you I'd expose you if you didn't help, and I will. I will. But you're in this now. Did you order the rescue ships? Speak."
"Yes,"
Belcour answered tightly.
"Good. Now listen to me. Vader and the Emperor and Tar died today. It's about to happen. You don't need to do anything more except supervise the repair and rescue just as you would otherwise. See? Nothing suspicious. See? Do you hear me, Belcour?"
Belcour had to pull the answer up from the depths of his gut.
"Yes. Mors is coming down to Ryloth."
Cham was quiet for a moment.
"That changes nothing. Do as we just discussed, and keep this comm at hand in case I need anything else. Everything turns on the next hour."
Chapter 7.
Champ pocketed the encrypted comm and stepped back into the command center. No one even turned to see him enter. All eyes were still on the screens, where the Perilous burned but still flew, moving at full speed through the system, racing toward Ryloth. In truth, Cham hadn't expected to bring the Perilous down with the Vulture droids, though he'd started hoping for it before Vader had gotten in the way. He bit down, activated the private comm, and addressed Isval, though he spoke loud enough for the others in the command center to hear him.
"Phase 2 is a go,"
he said, and the eyes in the room did turn to him then.
"The alert's going out in moments. You're up, Isval. The Perilous is burning but flying, heading straight for Ryloth."
"Copy that."
"Good luck." Callan, Zeron, Gobi all looked at him,
brows furrowed in a question. D4 gave an interrogatory beep. Callan voiced their shared thoughts.
There's a phase two?
There is, Champ said. He'd kept it need to know only.
Yes!
Gobi said. Champ stared at him until his glee wilted.
What?
Gobi asked.
Did I say something wrong?
This isn't a game, Champ said, thinking of the danger Isfal was about to put herself in. You understand that? People are dying.
Only their people,
Gobi said weakly. So far, Champ said. Let's hope it stays that way. But either way, it's no game.
Right,
Gobi said, his skin darkening with embarrassment.
Right.
Champ stared at the viewscreens. Matters were out of his hands, and the most dangerous part of the plan was just getting underway. Isfal shared a look with Eshko, a nod, and they waited for the alert to come. They didn't have to wait long before it came over the comm.
All ships to aid an Imperial vessel in distress.
Repair 83, copy that, she said. On the landing pad all around her, Twi'lek repair teams hurried out of side caves and ran for their ships. Other vessels, already crewed, lurched into the air on their antigravs. The onboard computer blinked as pertinent details, clearances, and assignments started emerging from Central. She waited for theirs to come through, and when it did, Eshko got them off the pad. In her secure wrist comlink, Isfal said to the two backup teams, "We are up. Status?"
"Up and out,"
came the first response.
"Off the pad and waiting for clearance,"
came the second. "Calm silence between us from now on."
Copy that,
came the responses.
Good luck.
She cut the connection and said over her shoulder, "Copy that." Drim, Phelan, and Crossed all echoed her sentiment. Eshko piloted them out of the mouth of the landing bay and into Ryloth's winds. As soon as he hit open air, he accelerated to full in-atmo speed. Ryloth's dry, rocky terrain fell away below them. In moments, the dying light of a planet-side day gave way to the dark of outer space. "We're clear of the outer atmosphere," Eshko said, checking the instruments. "Accelerating to full. ETA in under an hour." A fleet of repair ships, some Imperial, but most Rylothian, dotted space, heading in the direction of the wounded Star Destroyer. As they sped past Ryloth's moons, Isval's eyes lingered on the small rocky one where she knew Cham and many of the members of the movement were hiding in one of their long-standing underground bases. V-wings from the Imperial bases on the largest moon, the Moff's moon, fell in as escorts. She bit down and activated the private comm with Cham.
"Flying by you now. We'll soon clear the moon's orbits. I'm going to lose you after that."
"Get in and get out, Isval. As fast as you can. Speed is your ally."
She nodded.
"Any Imperial chatter about Vader and the Emperor?"
"Frequencies are buzzing with the revelation that they were aboard, but no certain word on whether they're still alive. The Perilous is heading fast toward Ryloth. It's already past the asteroid belt."
"And Tar?"
Cham guffawed.
"No one cares about Tar except us. But he's incidental at this point."
The communicator crackled in Isval's ear. She was losing the connection. Cham said something, but she couldn't make it out.
"Say again?"
"Think through your exits, Isval. You copy?"
She smiled. She should have known.
"Got it, Cham."
The entire repair fleet streaked through the system.
"Got it," Eshko said, pointing at a viewscreen which showed a ship at the edge of the scanner's range.
"That's her."
Isval watched as the Perilous took shape as a dot, then a larger blob, and finally a wedge. She leaned forward in her seat as they got closer and the ship got bigger. Phelan, Drim, and Crossed edged up from their seats in the rear cargo area to look over her and Eshko in the pilot's seats.
Drim whistled. Phelan swore. Crossed exhaled, his breath turned bad from stress.
You all right?
Isfal asked him. His Leku perked up.
Me? Yeah, fine.
She's hurting all right, Eshko said, meaning the ship.
She is,
Isfal said. The sight of the heavily damaged Perilous buoyed her.
Look at those fires, Drim observed. Vultures did a job.
Now we have to do ours, Isfal said, to nods all around. The Perilous's forward landing bay was damaged, the edges made jagged and charred, ruining the ordinarily sleek wedge of the ship's lines, giving it a look like a huge mouth open to swallow the stars. The Star Destroyer leaked flames from dozens of different onboard fires, large ones, and that was only what Isfal could see from her angle and distance. She imagined that Callan's repurposed explosive buzz droids had done a lot of additional damage deep inside the ship, or at least, she hoped so. It pleased her to think of how many Imperials must have already died. More coming, she said to herself.
How's that?
Eshko said. Nothing, she said, talking to myself.
You turning into Callan?
Eshko joked.
Muttering to yourself now?
She smiled. Damage from Vulture droids blackened the superstructure all along its length. An explosion had turned the forward sensor array into a jagged metal stub, rotating futilely on its mounts. The ship moved at velocity, sliding quickly through space despite the damage. A haphazard mix of fire suppression ships of all shapes and sizes, both Imperial and Twi'lek, already swarmed the huge ship, spraying suppression foam as directed. The smaller ships matched vectors with the Star Destroyer as they went, keeping pace.
She's heading fast for Ryloth,
Phelan said.
I'm thinking she feels vulnerable,
Eshko said. Smiles answered his wry comment, but no laughter. Isfal had never been so close to a Star Destroyer. And as they neared it and it filled the cockpit's glass, its size took her aback. She didn't let it awe her, though. If the movement wanted to hit the Empire hard, they'd have to hit it at this scale. And they needed to kill enough Imperials for it to hurt. More important, they needed to kill Vader and the Emperor. Her gaze went to the bridge where she imagined they were, if they were still alive.
Stay sharp, people,
she said to her team, and they all nodded, though they too stared at the size of the Star Destroyer with eyes wide. Orders and chatter carried over the comm channel, the Star Destroyer crew relaying orders to the incoming repair ships. Isfal simply waited for the hail. It came within moments.
This is Repair 83 from Ryloth, she responded.
Port 45A,
came the call, along with instructions to the navcomp. She ran a quick check, saw that Port 45A was far to stern, which was a long way from the target. She hailed them.
This is Repair 83. Sir, I have a crew of specialists aboard. We're supposed to assist in engine repair.
Repair 83, there's nothing here to indicate that.
It's chaotic, planetside, sir, as you can imagine. The call came and we launched. Orders and manifests are not exactly a priority at the moment. Keeping the Perilous flying is. My team can help best if we assist in the engine compartment.
Understood, Repair 83. Port 266R, then.
Isfal checked the location of 266R, saw that it was near the engine compartment and not too far from the hyperdrive chamber.
266R, she said. Thank you, Bridge.
Here we go, said Eshko.
She felt the change come over her team. The nervous excitement, quiet, shoulder-bunching tension. She felt it too, so she gave them something to do.
Double-check the gear, weapons, and explosives. Everyone armed, but nothing visible. Deep breaths, people.
The team set to it without objection as Eshko steered their ship to Bay 266R. Isfal scanned the comp to see the docking assignments for ships bearing the two decoy teams. She committed their ports to memory. Meanwhile, the onboard comp matched velocity with the Star Destroyer while Eshko spun them and backed up to the docking port for Bay 266R.
The repair ship's port mated with the port on the Perilous and locked down. Green light showed a clean seal. Work faces, she sent to her team. Nods around, bobbing Leku from the Twi'leks, serious expressions all around.
Here we go, she said.
She took the steering column on the anti-grav pallet, a large metal sled dotted with compartments, which were ordinarily stocked with tools and parts, and opened the bay to reveal the Perilous. The sound hit her first. The blare of alarms, a constant stream of chatter over the ship's comm, the hustle and bustle of the crowded corridor. The smell hit her too, the stink of burning plastic, charred flesh, and the acrid smell of electrical fires. All along the wide hallway, comp terminals hung loose from their wall mounts, the wires dangling free and puking sparks. Uniformed Imperials hustled through the corridors, individually or in groups, all of them looking dazed, speaking urgently into their wrist comm links. A few injured men and women lay slouched against the wall, blood staining their uniforms and the otherwise clean white floors.
Please step to the right while passing.
Wheeled mouse droids darted through the chaos. A faint haze of smoke hung near the ceiling, stinging Isval's eyes. The venting hadn't been able to clear it all yet.
Yo!
An officer shouted at her. Her heart rate spiked, but she didn't let it reach her expression, which remained calm. The officer, a human man with red hair and freckles, held a datapad in one hand. He said something into a wrist comm link as she steered the anti-grav pallet toward them. Her team followed. A group of stormtroopers came out of a side hallway and rushed toward them. She froze for half a moment, then reached for a weapon. But before she could draw her blaster, the stormtroopers rushed past them and on down the hall. She blinked and tried to recover herself, feigned patting herself for a tool.
IDs,
the officer said. She stepped out from around the pallet and extended her datapad, which held their forged credentials. She hoped he wouldn't study them too closely.
Repair 83, engine repair. We...
Good.
He glanced at her pad only in passing, then input some data into his own. He frowned at something and waved toward a junior officer standing across the corridor.
Lieutenant Grault, guide this repair team.
Sir, we know where we're going,
Isval said. The officer continued on as if she hadn't even spoken.
Guide this repair team to the engine access stations.
The whip-tree-thin Lieutenant Grault reminded Isval of the officer she'd beaten almost to death back in the Octagon. The expression on his ashen face showed that his world had been shaken by the attack on the Perilous. He and everyone else aboard had felt invulnerable on the Star Destroyer. She was glad they felt vulnerable now, felt some of the fear she and all Twi'leks lived with every day.
Of course, sir,
Grault saluted.
Follow me,
he said to Isval and her team, and moved briskly through the chaos. Isval stared at the back of his head as they walked, considering ways to kill him if she had need. The anti-grav pallet helped part the way through the tumult of the busy corridor. All over the ship it was the same. Heavy damage, fire, alarms, casualties, smoke, and everyone hurrying somewhere and paying little attention to anyone else. As they moved along, Isval consulted the rough diagram of the Star Destroyer she kept in her head. They were nearing the target. They'd need to divert. She gave Eshko a knowing look, and he gave a barely noticeable nod.
You know we know our way from here, Lieutenant,
she said to Grault.
I'm sure you have other things you'd rather be doing.
He didn't even turn to look at her.
I have my assignment, Twi'lek, he said.
And she realized that killing him had moved from possibility to certainty.
Of course,
she said, and shared a nod with Eshko. They came to a lift and piled in. She maneuvered the anti-grav pallet so that it filled the lift, and Grault pressed level 29 on the lift's control pad. When another Imperial tried to squeeze in, Eshko put his body in the way.
Sorry,
he said, as if he were just trying to get out of the way. Isval bumped them both with the anti-grav pallet.
Apologies, she said. I think we're filled, sir. this pallet.
She gave a helpless shrug.
Sorry,
Grolt said to the officer.
I'll wait, said the man, stepping back.
He saluted Grolt, who returned the gesture. The moment the doors closed, Isval drew the blaster she kept in the holster in the small of her back and fired into the back of Grolt's head. He collapsed without a sound. The shot from the small blaster left his head intact, and the entry wound, cauterized by the blaster bolt, didn't even bleed. Eshko and Drim didn't need instructions. They threw open one of the pallet's larger compartments and started to stuff Grolt's body inside.
Hurry,
Isval said. Isval watched the digital readout show their progress along the levels. 22. 23.
Come on!
Phelan assisted, twisting Grolt's arms into impossible angles, tearing gristle, then pushing hard on Grolt's head, stuffing him all the way in. 29. Eshko closed up the compartment, and the lift doors opened, revealing a pair of uniformed officers. Looks of surprise filled their faces. One of them wrinkled his nose, perhaps catching a whiff of blaster fire.
Burning wires, Isval said.
What level is this?
Eshko said, looking at the pad.
This doesn't seem right. We should be one down.
Coming?
He said to the waiting officers. They eyed the full lift.
We'll wait,
the taller of the two said. Isval held off on a hard smile until the lift doors closed. All of them exhaled as one, but otherwise said nothing as the lift descended and opened on the level they'd passed moments before. Carrying the body of a dead Imperial officer, they moved through the bustling corridors toward the hyperdrive chamber. As they approached that area of the ship, the corridors narrowed and became somewhat less filled with activity. Most of the bustle was in the main halls. Side passages were almost deserted.
Could have saved a lot of time by putting a vulture and its payload right here,
Phelan said.
Too deep in the ship and too hardened,
Isval said.
And we'd have been bored with nothing to do back on Ryloth,
Drim said. Mindful of Cham's admonition, Isval took care to note the layout in case their escape got hairy. She'd have been unconcerned about exit were she alone, but her team expected her to get them out, and so she would. They came around a corner to see a group of four stormtroopers who stood at attention before a large, reinforced hatch that provided access to the hyperdrive chamber. The stormtroopers tensed and put hands to blaster grips as Isval and her team approached.
Easy,
Isval said under her breath, though she felt lines of sweat drip down her sides from her armpits. She did her best to look harmless. One of the troopers stepped forward and held up a gloved hand.
Stop there. This area is restricted.
The amplifier in his helmet made his voice sound robotic. Isval slowed but didn't stop.
We're with Repair 83. Engine repair.
Engine access stations are that way,
the trooper said, pointing back the way they'd come.
I know,
Isval said, still coming toward him.
But the hyperdrive is damaged too. We're authorized to repair it. See?
She held out her datapad, but the stormtrooper would have none of it.
I don't care what that says, Twi'lek. Passage through this door isn't allowed without the presence of an authorized officer. Leave. Now.
He stared at her, and she saw her reflected face in the black lenses of his helmet. She felt her own team tense, but she decided to take a moment to regroup.
All right,
she said.
We'll go get an officer then and come back.
She started to turn the anti-grav pallet when a sound came from within the large compartment. A voice. Someone was calling over Lieutenant Grolt's comm.
Lieutenant Grolt,
said the muffled voice.
You're needed in Weapons Bay 19. Grolt, respond.
Isval felt her skin darken. The stormtroopers looked at the pallet, then back at Isval, and grabbed for their blasters. Vader's growing anger kept him company as the lift rose toward the bridge.
The doors slid open to the sights and sounds of a ship in crisis. The ashen-faced crew went about their business professionally, the air filled with the hum of comm chatter and the occasional shouted order. Damage reports came in from all over the Star Destroyer, and were relayed to appropriate duty stations in urgent voices, their recitations filling the air with tales of death and fire. Lewitt moved among the stations, taking reports, issuing orders, trying to retake control of the situation. A member of the crew ran past Vader and hurried onto the lift. The Emperor remained where he had been, standing on the central raised tier of the bridge. Ornfried Tarr stood near him, staring down into the crew pits and tilting his head to see the various viewscreens there. Eyes turned to Vader as he walked toward the central tier. Without breaking stride, he used the Force to take hold of Ornfried Tarr. He lifted the obese Twi'lek from the floor and hung him in the air before the Emperor. Tarr, wide-eyed, his many chins trembling, pawed at his throat and gasped for air. Vader took care not to kill him. Yet.
Lord Vader returns, the Emperor said. You seem displeased, old friend.
Vader released his hold on Tarr, and the Twi'lek fell hard to the deck. Vader stepped to the Emperor's side, looming over the prone Tarr. He pointed a finger at the Twi'lek.
There's a traitor on your staff, Senator. And that traitor is responsible for what has transpired here.
The word seemed to so shock Tarr that he could muster no reply. He massaged his throat and scurried back a bit from Vader.
What is this now?
Lewitt asked, taking the corrugated stairs two at a time from a lower deck.
This alien scum is a traitor?
Grunting, breathing heavily, Tarr struggled to his feet. His eyes went from Lewitt to Vader to the Emperor, pleading.
Not him, no, the Emperor said. But one or more members of his staff.
My Emperor!
Tarr said, his voice rough from Vader's force choke.
Lord Vader, I had no idea! If I had!
He sniffed, stood up straight.
I vow to find the traitors behind this foul attack, and...
Oh, I believe you,
the Emperor said dismissively.
But that hardly mitigates your fault, Senator. You had a traitor on your staff and were ignorant of it.
The Emperor signaled the royal guards, and they stepped to the Senator's side. Tarr's chins quivered. He looked as though he might weep. His squinty eyes flicked from the guards to Vader to the Emperor.
My Emperor! If only you could...
To Lewitt, the Emperor said,
Restrict all of the Senator's staff to their quarters and deny them access to communications equipment or computer terminals. Present this as ordinary practice in situations of this kind. Lord Vader will interrogate them when we reach Ryloth.
Vader looked forward to the opportunity. The Emperor turned back to Tarr.
Senator, I trust I can count on your assistance in all things Ryloth for the foreseeable future. With this spice and slave trade, and the Free Ryloth movement, harsher measures may be required to quell the difficulties on your planet. I think if my orders came out of your mouth, the people would accept them more readily. Do you agree?
Of course, my Emperor, Tarr said.
In the meantime, I trust you'll remain here with Lord Vader and me. It's fascinating to watch broken things get pieced back together.
Tarr didn't bother to respond.
Chapter 8.
The stormtroopers drew their blasters at the same time as Isval's teammates. Isval did not bother to reach for her weapon, instead driving the anti-grav pallet full speed into the stormtroopers, slamming them into the walls and fouling their blaster shots, which went high and wide. Eshko shot one of the troopers in the head. Drim shot another in the chest, and Phelan and Cross shot the other two in the face.
"We have minutes,"
she said to them, then broke comm silence to call over to the decoy teams elsewhere on the station. Cham had insisted on the decoys in case matters went badly and they needed distraction, and Cham, as usual, had been right.
"Think through your exits," she reminded herself,
though at the moment she cared less about an exit than bringing down the Perilous.
"You are go," she said to the decoy teams. "All teams, you are go.
But we aren't hot yet. Repeat, we aren't yet hot."
Affirmative replies came. The two other teams who'd snuck into the Star Destroyer aboard the repair ships would set an explosive or three, even start a firefight if necessary. Isval drew her twin blasters. Drim pulled a heavy blaster rifle from a compartment on the pallet, and Eshko and the rest of the team readied weapons. Drim overrode the security protocol on the hyperdrive hatch. It slid open, and they rushed in after the pallet, leaving the dead stormtroopers behind them in the hallway.
"Captain!"
called the bridge communications officer, and something in his tone drew Vader's attention.
"Sir, we're getting reports of a firefight on Deck 17, and some explosions in Bay 12 forward."
"A firefight?"
Lewitt asked.
"How can we have a firefight?"
The comm officer put his hand to his earpiece, nodding, then said,
"Sir, it's one of the repair crews. Twi'leks. The explosions, too, appear to be intentionally set.
I have reports of multiple additional casualties. Security teams are en route."
Vader saw it then. The attack by the droid fighters, as bad as it had been a ruse, or only half the plan. The Free Ryloth movement was more resourceful than either he or the Emperor had imagined.
"Tell your security teams to kill every Ryloth repair team on board,"
he said, the word silencing the bridge crew. He turned and strode for the lift. Lewitt called after him.
"Lord Vader, there are almost 100 teams aboard! My Emperor!"
100 teams seems a manageable number,"
the Emperor said, his eyes not on the captain, but on Vader.
"Give the order, Captain. Kill them all."
"Yes, Lord Vader."
The lift doors closed before Vader's face. He headed for Deck 17. The huge, upright, vertical slab of the Star Destroyer's hyperdrive sat at the bottom of a circular depression in the middle of the cavernous chamber that housed it. A corrugated metal walkway encircled the drive's bay. Computer stations and other hardware Isval didn't recognize or understand covered the walls. For a moment, the layout reminded her of the Octagon in Lesu. The association summoned a grim smile. She'd leave dead Imperials here, just as she had there. Engineers and officers stood at intervals around the walkway, checking or monitoring comps and conduits. Apparently, the thick hatch had prevented them from hearing the shots in the hallway beyond. The nearest one, a tech officer, turned to face them, lowering the data pad he held.
"You can't be in here unaccompanied—"
he began, but stopped, wide-eyed, when he registered the blaster she held. Isval shot him through the data pad and in the chest, and man and device fell to the floor. Beside her, Drim opened up with the blaster rifle, while Eshko and Phelan and Cross 2 opened fire on the crew, sending them shouting and scrambling.
"Secure the hatch!"
she said to Eshko, and picked another target, fired, then a second, fired, and left both of them dead on the floor with smoking holes in their uniforms. The Imperials scrambled, ducked, and tried to flee toward the hatch opposite. One, a short, stocky man in an engineer's uniform, ran for an alarm, but Drim shot him in the back. He slammed face first into the bulkhead and fell to the floor, leaving a smear of blood on the wall. None of the